Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an X Tuesday episode. It's also part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about Next Gen number 3. This is basically the book in the age of X-Men that covers the young group of X-Men. So Armor, Glob, Anole, Pixie, and who am I forgetting? What's his name? Rockslide? Is that it? Yeah, Rockslide. That's who it is. Anyway, it's written by Ed Brisson. The art is by Marcus Toe. Color art is by Jason Keith. And we have letters by Clayton Cowles. And I have to say that this is probably my favorite book of the Age of X-Men titles. I don't know if it's just because Ed Brisson is such an incredible writer, or if it's just the one that kind of feels the most fresh to me. I mean, the art by Marcus Toe's done really, really well. The colors are bright and vibrant. And, you know, seeing these young kids just not willing to just take at face value what the supposed people in authority, you know, adults or what have you, are telling them. They're questioning things. They want the truth. They care about each other. It all goes back to their relationships with each other, their relationships with the world. And, you know, we had Ed Brisson on recently to talk about his Catch and Release Kickstarter. And, you know, I talked to Ed about, you know, what is it that he brings to superhero comics that he feels is, you know, most important in terms of, you know, he does a lot of crime stuff that feels really grounded, you know, non-superhero comics that feel grounded. And how does he translate that to superhero comics? And he said, you know, it's all about how they relate. It's all about the character's voice and the connections, as opposed to, you know, focusing on the powers or the fantastical in the stories. And so, again, I think that's why I'm enjoying this book so much. The characters feel so authentic because their reactions, their voices, their relationships with each other are very authentic. So, the book starts out, we're at the Summers Institute for Higher Learning, and the whole group of sort of younger X-Men are all sitting there eating breakfast, and Pixie's getting on Hisako, getting on Armor about skipping class the previous day and saying that Mr. Yoshida, better known as Sunfire, is going to fail her, and Armor doesn't want to hear it. You know, she's got other things on her mind. She's concerned about Anole. You know, her and Glob both are. They know that Anole has been involved in the resistance. They know he's been mind wiped twice, and if he gets caught a third time, he's basically going to disappear. But they can't just confront him, you know, right there in front of everybody, because, you know, that would basically get him caught and do the thing that they're actively trying to avoid for him. So it's clear that they're preoccupied and they're worried. Meanwhile, for Anole's part, you know, he's trying to get some answers, and I suppose trying to figure out a way to spread the message of the resistance a little farther, get some solid evidence. And he had asked Rockslide, who's a member of the history discipline, about what happened to the life seed after Hope Summers used it to give everybody mutant powers. And Rockslide went looking and couldn't find anything. And in fact, Rockslide's even, you know, reading a book at the table right there, and Anole's asking him, "So did you find anything?" Says, "No, there doesn't seem to be anything, but that doesn't mean it's not there. I just haven't found it yet." So Anole thinks that there won't be. And Rockslide says, "Well, I'll never find it if you keep bugging me about it. You know, give me some time to look." And Anole says, okay, I'll take the hint. I'm leaving." And as he walks away, Armor notices, and she says, "Hey, okay, Glob, we need to go." And the others are like, wait, where are you going? Why do you need to leave right now? We have class in 10 minutes. Pixie's worried about Armor, clearly. You're not going to skip class again, are you? You barely ate anything. And Armor just ignores her. You know, she just wants to get out of there. So the reason they got up and left so quickly is because Anole got up and left. They want to talk to him again in private. And so they kind of confront him and they say, "Hey, we saw you the other night at the fire, you and Bling, Department X." And Anole's like, he's playing innocent. "I don't know what you're talking about." And Hisako says, "You know, don't try to play us for fools. If we know, then how many others do? You could be in a lot of trouble." And before they can really get to the bottom of it and push him for the truth, Dean Angel shows up. Hey, shouldn't you guys be on the way to class? You know, he doesn't look too happy. And they say, yeah, we're on our way. And as they walk away, they tell an old, you know, this isn't over. So meanwhile, in Professor Madison Jeffrey's office, he's one of the professors in the Department of History. And for those that don't, if the name sounds familiar, but you're not sure who he is. So he's Box. He's a member of Alpha Flight. And Santo is in there. Rock Slide is in there. And he's saying, I looked through everything twice. And there's no mention of what happened to the life seat after the resolution. I mean, even if it was destroyed, it would say somewhere, right? And Professor Jeffries is saying, well, maybe you need to keep digging. He's like, but you must know what happened. I mean, you're a student of history. And Jeffries evades the question by saying, well, what sort of teacher would I be if I just gave my students the answers? And then there's a knock at the door, and the librarian that Rockslide had asked about books or reference material pertaining to the life seat and what happened to it, it's her at the door. She comes in and she says, hey, all these books you sent out to be rebound are back, and I'll just leave them here for you, so you can take a look before we reshelve them. And Jeffrey stands up and he says, oh, well, look at that. I suspect you'll find what you're looking for right here. And what a coincidence, right? And Rockslide's just as confused. He said, but I checked all the library cards, all the records. There's nothing about this book on file. Like, this book didn't seem to exist. And Jeffrey says, well, you know, you probably just missed it. Happens to the best of them. And he's like, no, I triple checked. And you know that feeling where, you know, you've looked and you looked and you looked and you looked. And Jeffrey says, you know, don't become so focused on one thing that you ignore the answers that are right in front of you. You know, and don't intentionally misinterpret things in order to satisfy some kind of, you know, preconceived notion that you have. And and Rockslide says, okay, and he takes the book. But I mean, I would feel the same if I were him, right? Like, you're looking for answers, you're looking for answers, you're looking for answers, you can't find anything. You know, it would be like looking online, you know, doing some sort of Google search for a specific phrase over and over and over, you know, changing the phrasing around, using your Google foo, trying to find something, and nothing shows up. And then as soon as you ask somebody else about it, you know, because maybe they have an answer that's not online, they go, oh, just look online. And they type up the first thing you typed and it comes up, right? Like, you would completely question that. You'd be like, no, I looked. How is that possible that it, that's the situation Rockslide is in. So meanwhile, in the civil management class, the 10th year class, so this would be their final year. And civil management, that's basically the discipline for training members of Department X, so law enforcement. And Sunfire's telling them, okay, there's a new pandemic that's sweeping the world. And as the next generation of Department X officers, it's going to be up to you to stop it. It's called Unveil, and he's showing them some pictures. He says, recently Department X seized a large shipment destined for the streets, and there's no telling how many people got their hands on it before they were able to seize the shipment. And some people take it because they think it will make them feel better. It's going to open their minds. But instead, all it does is addict them. They become desperate. And many of them that take it will die. And so he says, this is why it's important to find it and get it off the streets and get those who may be using it the help they need. And then, you know, he shows some pictures of people that, you know, the before and after, and how it messes them up. And he says, look for behavioral changes, you know, moody, and changes in appearance, changes in personality. Normally happy friend, you know, becomes irritated easily. They're being secretive. You know, they're bailing on you. They're not showing up to things that they said they would. And they seem to lose their appetite, and they're unfocused. And if you confront them about it, they're going to get angry. So if you suspect somebody, you know, don't confront them yourself. Let us know. And this is just, first of all, you created a utopia, right? So if everything is true and everything is real and everything is right, why would anybody need to take Unveil? Like, it doesn't, you know, when you stop and think about it logically, it doesn't make any sense. Everybody's a mutant. Nobody's persecuted. Everybody gets to go into the discipline that most suits them. And, you know, it's one big happy family. So when you stop and think about it, there would be no need for this. Why do you need it? Why do you need Unveil? But you know, again, they don't question. This is fascism, right? Believe what people tell you. We're not lying. But then when you start looking at the signs and the symptoms, you know, that Sunfire is telling them, it's exactly what somebody who knows the truth would act like. You know, he's basically saying, and this is very common in fascist regimes, you know, tell on your neighbor. You know, somebody who knows the actual truth and who's trying to spread that truth, or at least be involved in some sort of resistance. These are all the things they're going to do. And so it's like, here we go with the secret police. Here we go with the propaganda and the turn in your neighbor. And we can see while Sunfire is saying this that Pixie's looking at Armor, you know, very intently. And that's what she, you know, you can just read the look on her face. Oh, that's what's wrong with Armor. She's been taking Unveil. She's taking drugs. So meanwhile, Anole is outside, headed toward his room, and he passes a community board, and we see him take out a pen and write on it, and then head off kind of secretly. Glob is out feeding his three favorite chickens, and these are the three chickens he's named Scott, Logan, and Hope. So obviously Scott Summers, you know, Wolverine is Logan, and then Hope Summers. And Rockslide comes out and says, "Hey man, scooch over a bit. I need to talk to somebody." And you gotta love Glob. He's so goofy. And he's like, "Oh, you want to talk to Scott, Logan, and Hope? I find it helps me sometimes." And Rockslide looks at him. He's like, "What? No, I want to talk to you. You want to talk to the chickens? No, man. Like, I want to talk to you. You really talk to them?" And Glob's like, "Maybe." And Rockslide says, "Do they talk back?" Glob says, "No, but you know, sometimes it's good to get it out, you know, say out loud what's bothering you and feel like somebody's listening, even if it is just a bunch of chickens." And Rockslide says, "Okay, yeah, I can see that. You know, I just need to get this out. I need to, you know, like you said, say it out loud. And maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, and like Professor Jeffrey said, but," and he starts talking about how, you know, he was looking for what happened to the Life Seed after the resolution. And you know, he looked at all the reference, and he said there is none, or there was none, to be more precise. I mean, I checked everywhere over and over and over and over, and nothing. And then the moment I mentioned it to Professor Jeffries, all of a sudden, like magic, a book appears, a book that I could swear to you did not exist before I asked. And now, you know, this book appears, and it answers it all, you know, very cleanly, and says, "Oh, by the way, the Life Seed was destroyed during the resolution." He's like, "And maybe because I'm in the middle of this search, you know, maybe I don't want to admit that I'm wrong and that I missed something, but it just feels too convenient. Like I found a hole in our history, and you know, I told somebody in authority about it, and all of a sudden it's patched up because they don't want people asking too many questions." And he says, "You know what? Now that I say it out loud, forget I said anything. This is way too crazy." And it's a dangerous way to think. So, thanks for listening, Glob. And he starts to get up, and Glob says, "Wait," and grabs him by the arm and says, "You're not wrong." And Rockside looks at him like, "What are you talking about?" Glob said, "You're right. This world isn't real. Everybody thinks it is, but it's not." And Rockside's like, "Whoa, that's not what I was saying. I just thought that it felt like they were hiding something from me." And Glob says, "Yeah. That is what they're hiding. The fact that this whole world is a lie. It's a lie, and no one sees it. Like, everybody's brainwashed. Every time there's a crack or some sort of imperfection and that comes to, you know, is brought to their attention, they just spackle it over and make people forget." And Rockslide says, Who does that? Well, them. Who is them? Well, I haven't figured that part out yet, but whoever they are, Department X works for them, maybe the X-Men too." And Rockslide's like, "That isn't Glob, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why would this have happened?" And Glob says, "Look, the Life Seed wasn't destroyed. Hope didn't die. We weren't hatched from test tubes. Where we came from, we were the X-Men." And Rockslide's like, "No way. Now I know you're messing with me." And Glob says, "No way, I can prove it to you. But we don't know how. We don't know what Glob is going to show him yet." Meanwhile, civil management class is over, and Armor has left. And as she's walking out, Pixie kind of confronts her. You know, she says, "Look, Armor, you're my friend. I care about you. If you're on drugs, you would tell me, right? And Armor's like, wait, what? You learn about drugs in class and suddenly I'm on drugs? She says, are you kidding me? You're all those symptoms that Professor Yoshida said, you shave your head, you're missing class, you're not eating. It's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. And Hasako says that I have a lot on my mind with what we saw the other night. Just stuff. Look, I'm going to be okay, but I got to go. I'll explain it to you later. So it's just like I said, all those symptoms that Sunfire said are things that somebody who knows the truth or is trying to discover the truth or trying to get hooked up with the resistance or is a part of the resistance, that's how they're going to act. But really what Armor wants to do is she just wants a chance to talk to Enole before something bad happens. So she's actually on her way to Enole's room and she just wants Pixie to go away. But Pixie's like, no, you don't get off that easily. You're constantly sneaking off. I want to know what's going on. Prove to me you're not on Unveil. And Armor's had enough. She's like, you know what? You're the one acting crazy. Maybe I should be the one worried about you. We'll talk later. And she walks off. So Pixie definitely has her suspicions and they haven't been put to ease at all by this most recent conversation with Armor. So as Pixie stands there watching Armor walk off, Manon and Maxim come up to Pixie. And I don't know what it is about these two kids. These little French irritating little, they're just little stick your nose in where it doesn't belong. I mean, right from the time they first showed up in Extermination, written by Ed Brisson, they're not likable. They're like arrogant and they give off this vibe of just being not people you want to be around. Just, I can't even put my finger on what it is, but they're just, people you want to like choke them because they're, like I said, know it all, stick their nose in where it doesn't belong and just, ugh. So anyway, they're goading Pixie on saying, you're not wrong. We know she's acting weird too, really weird. And Maxim even says, I saw things in her head that scare me. And Manon is saying, yeah, she's going to do something really bad. You can't just let her walk away. So, like, mind your own business. Like, why is it your place to say something or to goad her on? I mean, they even tell her directly, you need to stop her. You need to stop Armor. So, meanwhile, Enole's about to walk into his room, and Hisako's like, Victor. He's like, oh crap. He runs to his room, closes the door, and she's had it. Like Armor's going to have this conversation with Enole. She says, you little turd. And she actually uses her power to break down his door. He says, you broke my door. Armor says, well, I was trying to save you, you idiot. What, by breaking my door? She's like, look, I saw you at the fire the other night. I know you're mixed up in something bad. And he's denying, I don't know what you're talking about. And again, Armor is not having it. She definitely is the leader of this group, this younger group of X-Men. She says, don't lie to me. If I know, then other people know. And Glob says, this isn't the first time you've done something like this. And because of that, if you get caught again, they're going to make you disappear. And he's like, wait, how does Glob know? How do you, are you taking Unveil? Are you part of the resistance? She says, no. Why does everyone think I'm on drugs? Glob, he can just remember. He thinks it's his biowax protecting him. And he used it to protect me also, but that's not important. What's important is if you keep going down this path, they're going to make you disappear. And as your friend, I can't let that happen. So meanwhile, door can't close. Remember, it's broken. Like she closed it the best she could. So who comes walking in but Pixie? Like, what's going on here? Are you two romantically involved? Oh my God, your grades, retrogrades, intimately involved. I knew something was up. And Armor's shaking her head like, Pixie, what are you doing here? So I'm trying to stop you guys before you go too far down this path. And then Pixie spots the empty vial of Unveil on his desk and like, oh, this is just keeps better, getting better and better. I'm placing you under arrest, Enole. He's like, what are you talking about? He's just, jumping to conclusions. Ole's been dealing Unveil and you've been buying it. We have to report him and get you help. And Armor's like, oh my God, this is just spiraling out of control. So she says, you know what, Pixie, I'm so sorry. And knocks her out one punch. And Enole's like, oh my God, I can't believe you just did that. He says, listen, you need to go. Get out of here before she wakes up. And Enole writes something on a piece of paper before he leaves. He climbs out the window. He says, look, go to these people. They can help. They know what's really going on. They're going to be suspicious. They have to be to survive, but let them know I sent you, give them this piece of paper, and, you know, hopefully we will catch up later. So meanwhile, outside, there's a big crowd that's gathered around that that bulletin board, that community board that we saw Anol writing on earlier. And it catches the attention of Dean Angel. And he walks over there and, okay, go to class. I'm sure you'll have somewhere else to be. Nothing to see here. And they say, yes, Dean Angel, yes. Okay. You know, knowing that now that he's there, they're looking at something they shouldn't have been. And he's going to be upset by what he sees. So they scattered pretty quickly. And on the community board, Noel has written, you are being lied to. And there's also some flyers on there that say identity, autonomy, harmony, which is kind of a slogan for this Age of X-Men world. And Noel has put above each of those words the word no. So instead of saying identity, autonomy, harmony, saying no identity, no autonomy, no harmony. Because they really don't have any, right? They don't have true identities. They're all brainwashed into believing an alternate history. They don't have any autonomy. They can't make their own decisions. They're brainwashed. And there's certainly no harmony. They don't even get to have relationships, whether that be close friendships or something more intimate. I mean, even family relationships, they don't get to have. So it's an interesting way to look at it, sort of passive resistance. But a pretty big risk that Anol took to write all this down. And Dean Angel starts tearing the flyers off the bulletin board, and he's kind of watching the cameras walk by, or the students rather walk by, and looks up, and there's a camera overhead. So, you know, clearly the implication there is he's going to, you know, go take a look at the camera and find out who did this. So I guess it's a good thing that Anol took off when he did. And that's how the issue ends, to be continued. So again, I think this is my favorite of the X-Men, Age of X-Men series. It's got a lot of agency. These kids are hungry. They care about each other deeply. They're on a quest for truth. They're not as cynical and jaded as the older heroes. Like in the X-Men, the Marvel's X-Men title, you know, they're sort of choosing sides. We saw that in the last issue 3. And they feel like they have all the answers. You know, I know what I'm doing. I know what I should do. I know what's right. I'm just going to stand up for what I believe in. But there's not room for kind of questioning. And here it feels like there is. Like, hey, you may be doing something you shouldn't. And we all want to find out what the truth is. And we want to protect each other. And that seems to be the focus, rather than when you look at Marvelous X-Men, the focus was on, hey, I'm going to stand up for what I believe in. And that matters most because I'm an island unto myself, right? Getting back to the idea of individuation, the individual is his own tribe. So, and you have the right to believe what you believe. The connections here seem to run a little deeper with these younger kids. And it might just be a situation where they're used to not having a lot of agency, right? They're used to being told what to do because they're younger. And so when they do find some cracks, they're more likely to go, well, wait, we've always had these beliefs, not because we've lived our lives and formed these beliefs, but because you've told me. They've learned it secondhand. And now they're questioning all of those beliefs and questioning what people have told them because they are seeing those cracks. So again, this is far and away my favorite of the Age of X-Men series. It's done really well. The art by Marcus Toe is fantastic. The color work. At various times I've heard that, you know, Marcus Toe and people give him credit for being a good artist, but I don't think he gets enough credit because he's just an incredible storyteller. You know, there's not anything in, at least in this particular issue, in terms of layouts on the page, you know, laying the panels down on the page or layouts within the panel that jumps out, but it's very solid storytelling. Great facial expressions, wonderful choices on body language and things like that. So, it's a great issue. If you're only going to read one Age of X-Men story, one series, I think this is it. This gives you a good overview in a way, because you're getting all the different aspects of the world, because of the four disciplines all being at the university, and they're pulling in other things like Unveil, you know, which is a big part of the Apocalypse and the Extracts, or the Retrogrades, which is part of the Extremists. So again, I think you get a good overview. So, okay, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Hope everybody enjoyed it. As always, I want to wish everyone a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Merry Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate. I hope it's joyous. I hope you get to spend time with family and friends, and you really enjoy your holiday season. Maybe you have time off of work. Maybe you're going to travel, and we have all these great hours and hours of the 12 days of the Comic Source for you to listen to in the car on your way there. So I hope you all get a chance to enjoy that. Be sure to let us know if you get any sort of comic book or comic book inspired gifts this year. Reach out to us on social media. You know, we'd love to share it with everybody. Send us a picture and what have you. Don't know that I'm getting any comic gifts myself, but there is always hope. My wife is not too into them, as I've talked about before. So anyway, as I said, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.